You're listening to the Prepper Recon Podcast. For questions, comments, and podcast archives, go to PrepperRecon.com. I've personally been buying gold and silver from JM Bullion for over 2 years. They offer the best prices over spot that I can find, and I've never had a problem with an order. If you're looking to trade in some of your fiat paper for real money, check out JMBullion.com today. Hey, Preppers and Patriots. This is the second half of my interview with Sergeant Tim of Outlaw Patriot News. Enjoy the show. We were talking about Kim Jong and his capabilities. He wouldn't even have to have those capabilities in-house. He could solicit basically cyber mercenaries to develop malicious code or launch an attack or whatever and just pay them.
Well, and I think that my own personal opinion, and I know I've heard Dr. Vincent Pry, you know, he talks a lot about the dangers of EMP, but recently, I read an article that was talking about his calls for cybersecurity. And personally, you know, with the background that I have in arms control, I think that maybe we should look at reaching out to some of these other countries and writing kind of like a cyber forces treaty to try to put a stop to some of this and the proliferation of some of this this malware that is getting out.
Do you suspect that Kim Jong could have been behind WannaCry?
Well, I did see a couple of articles in which they said that the code had a lot of similarities to the Sony hack, which was blamed on the North Koreans. And again, if I was a tin pot dictator, I would not waste the money trying to get nukes where everyone knows when you test them, everyone knows whenever you launch them, when you're testing your missiles. I would develop a strong cyber core, like the whole thing with Russia supposedly hacking the elections. Even if, which there isn't, but even if there was evidence that the Russians went in and got into individual polling machines and changed votes, you cannot, with 100% certainty, say that it was the Russians that did it, because people who know what they're doing can redirect their IP addresses and hide their IP addresses. You know, they can bounce it through a few different countries before it ever launches that attack, and there's no way that you can say with 100% certainty who did it. And so, you know, that's also the danger in all of this is this was a ransomware attack. What that is probably a low-level, very intelligent hacker who was just looking to make a few bucks, and it's even possible that he released this thing out there and did not even realize how much damage it would do. But whenever you're talking about state actors getting involved, the amount of money that they can put behind the program, whenever you're talking about, you know, a country like China or North Korea, where they can basically raise children up through an education system that makes them into you know, very potent hackers, it's a real danger to a country like ours that is so reliant on technology, which really goes back to a book written in 1999 by a couple of Chinese generals, Chinese colonels, laid out a formula for China as a less technologically advanced country to take on a more technologically advanced country, just like the United States. And for the life of me right now, I cannot remember the name of the book. But in it, they talked about lawfare. We're seeing lawfare engaged on, you know, every day in this country, whether you're talking about the attacks on the alternative media, through trying to turn them off or suing them, all the way up to what's going on with the President of the United States, even right now with the special prosecutor. That, those are all forms of lawfare. Then they pointed to economic warfare. Definitely, in terms of the United States and China, China holds the economic advantage because we are in a trade deficit, you know, up to our eyeballs with China. And the majority of our products today are made in China. So a war with China would very quickly lead the United States down a very hard path. And then they also talked about cyber warfare. And I think in the book it wasn't called cyber because in those days, you know, it was 99, I think, when they wrote it. And in those days, we didn't have the term cyber yet. They called it network warfare. But even back then, they were already starting to see the value of being able to get into the interlinking internet system. And now we're at a point where the majority of the world is connected to the internet. A lot of it still passes through the United States on that original internet backbone, which, you know, most of it has been upgraded, but some of it hasn't been. And the United States is far more reliant upon the internet for business transactions, for communication, even for travel with stuff like GPS and stuff like that. All of that runs across the internet. And someone who wishes to do harm to this country could do it pretty easily because our networks are there for the taking. And you know, the simple fact is, it sounds like I am coming down very hard on the IT guys. I also want to point out there are literally thousands of cyber attacks on this country every day that are defended against, that are, whether it be by, you know, our military guys who are doing network defense, probably the NSA, or whether you're talking about IT professionals at those banks who are defending against those cyber attacks. But with the sheer volume of them, at some point someone is going to get in, and the havoc that will be wreaked will be felt probably by every household in America. I mean, don't you think that, Mark?
Yeah, absolutely. And talk to us about the vulnerabilities for a cyber attack against communication systems. What would that be like? Could we lose internet altogether? Could cell service go down? 911 emergency service?
Well, and just imagine, you know, if you woke up one morning or even you're just sitting there one afternoon and nobody ever checks their bars really anymore unless it doesn't work. But the entire cell grid goes down, or the entire internet goes down. I don't want to sound like your typical middle-aged guy who's going to scream and rail against the millennials, especially the younger generation, who has never been without the internet, and they rely on the internet whether it be for entertainment or whether it be for even ordering groceries, because you know you can pretty much order anything that you want now through sites like Amazon, and it'll be there within a couple of hours in some cases, depending upon what region you live in. And so I know that some of the young people that I worked with before I retired from the military, they did their grocery shopping as well as every form of shopping that they did it completely through Amazon. And if the internet were to go down, that would leave them pretty much stranded, because also our grocery stores, they would not be able to place their orders. Trucking would stop. And that's the thing, is our critical infrastructure is so interlinked with the internet that I don't know if we lost the internet, I don't know how people, you know, I don't know that people still have the ability to put pen to paper and get through it. It would definitely, it would shut down transport. It would shut down communication. And I think that for a large majority of the people, that sheer shock of not being able to pick up their cell phone, call for help or call and check on loved ones, that right there would put a tremendous amount of stress on them. And then when they find out that, you know, maybe they don't have any money in the bank, you know, the grocery store only has a limited supply of food, and they're one of those people who, you know, maybe they buy a week's worth of groceries and that's it. Or maybe they even buy their groceries each night at what they're going to eat. Pretty dire straits. I think that of all the things, just as kind of a sideline, I want to share something that that happened to me the other day. I was talking to a friend of mine, a work buddy, and we were talking about prepping and all of the different things that could happen that would cause you to dip into your preps. And because he's done a little bit of prepping, he's not gone over the top or anything, but he's got a wife and a kid now, and he's starting to see the value of prepping in order to protect them. And he told me, he said, you know, if you came to me a couple of years ago and you started talking to me about prepping, I'd have thought you were some kind of crazy guy, you know, off of the TV show Doomsday Preppers or something. But he said, in today's age, if you're not doing something to protect yourself, you've got to be crazy, because the world has accelerated at such a rate and things have gone into such chaos in the world that to not prepare yourself and prepare your loved ones for that eventuality is sheer madness. And I agree with them. I don't know how people make it through their day and ignore and threats that are out there. Definitely, I think the cyber threat is probably man-made threat that I fear the most. I fear that even more than say somebody setting off a dirty bomb or Kim Jong-un building a nuke and shooting it off at a U.S. city, because the implications of cyber warfare are such that it would have a devastating effect, and you would never know where it came from, and you never knew you would never know what hit you.
We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
In the Days of Elijah, Book 2, Wormwood, by best-selling author Mark Goodwin. Everett and Courtney Carl have survived the Seven Seal Judgments, which devastated the planet, but have their efforts to stay alive been in vain? The next series of judgments to fall upon the earth are known as the Seven Trumpets. Within this series of cataclysms is the earth's collision with a giant asteroid known as Wormwood. The comet will poison much of the planet's fresh water supplies, making survival nearly impossible. With each subsequent trumpet judgment, their odds of living grow slimmer. If Everett and Courtney are to survive, they'll need perseverance, faith, and a great outpouring of providence from the Almighty. Buy your copy of The Days of Elijah, Book 2, Wormwood, in paperback, Kindle, or audio edition from Amazon.com today.
What do you think's the bare minimum that we should be doing to be prepared right now, given the what we've just seen with WannaCry and Edelcuz and things of that nature, and knowing that the tensions between North Korea and the U.S. have never been higher, and knowing the vulnerabilities that are still out there from that NSA toolkit that was auctioned off by the shadow brokers. What do you think? You should never let your tank go below three quarters of full, and probably keep a couple thousand dollars outside of the bank. At least 6 weeks worth of food.
I would definitely encourage people to, like you were saying, if you get down to a half a tank of gas, definitely go and fill it up. Because if you're one of these people who, you know, maybe you only have enough money to buy a half a tank of gas each week to get you to and from work, try to keep it at full. I think that you have to have, at the very least, you should have a 1 month food supply for your family. And that includes a 1 month supply of water, because if the grid, you know, if the entire internet were to go down, our electric grid would go down, and those purification plants would go down. I think, and I hear a lot of people, especially in the Christian community, who are very much against self-defense products, but I think that you have to have self-defense. I personally prefer a gun because it's the ultimate equalizer. You know, if something were to happen, maybe something like this happened while I was at work, and someone came in to try to do harm to my family, either my wife or either one of my kids could take someone out with a gun, even if they were substantially larger than them. As far as money goes, I think it's a good idea to keep a little bit of money out of the bank, but I would encourage people to also invest. If you don't invest in precious metals, and I know a lot of people can't, it's expensive, and then you run into the issue of where are you going to store it, because if you're storing it at your home, you could possibly become a target for someone of crime. But look for those things that you would be able to barter. I've seen a lot of good lists put together by some of these prepping websites of barter items that people are going to run out of pretty quickly. And you can just pick these up at the grocery store, you know, onesies and twosies as you go. You don't have to go and buy a whole case or whatever. If you have the money to, that's fine. But I always try to give people alternatives if they're on a budget. I think that ultimately, also in this, you should include trying to upgrade your own home network so that you don't become a victim. You know, definitely if something happened and the entire internet and the grid went down and everything, it's not going to do you any good. But if you want to protect yourself against some of these viruses and malware and just somebody trying to get into your network to whether it be to get into your information or whatever, you have to look at network security kind of like an onion. You have to have various layers to it. Personally, you know, here in my area, one of the primary internet service providers is Spectrum. They used to be called Time Warner, but they've changed their name. And whenever you sign up for service with them, they offer you to rent one of those all-in-one models where you have, you know, your internet router as well as a Wi-Fi hotspot, basically. I encourage people not to use those. Get one of the actual old-school routers. As much of a hassle as it is, try to wire as many of your devices as you can. You know, definitely desktops, just wire them to the router. If you have to have Wi-Fi, pick up a Wi-Fi antenna. They've come down a lot in price. And with that, with you having your own, you know, separate Wi-Fi antenna,
not only is it a little more secure, you can control the strength of the signal. Many of these all-in-one units, the signal strength is turned all the way up, and that's why whenever you go into your house and you turn on your phone's Wi-Fi to try to connect to your home network, you'll see like 10 of your neighbors' Wi-Fi networks also listed, and that's because their strength is turned way up, which is someone who knows what they're doing to get into any one of those networks. But me, I also consider that because I think that we have far too many electromagnetic frequencies in the air already, and that gives you a way of turning that down and toning it down so you're not shooting even more of that EMF radiation into your body. I really believe that, I've done some research, and I really believe that possibly my daughter has some EMF sensitivity because she gets frequent headaches and stuff. And so that's something that I'll also look at. But I think one of the things that I personally do, and this is not giving away any secrets or anything like that, I think you have to look at prepping in a short-term strategy and a long-term strategy. In the short term, you do things like whenever you go to the store, you look at the things that your family typically eats that are I would say short-term storage or even medium-term storage. Those things that you use on a monthly basis. Try to get into the habit of using your pantry kind of like a store shelf, where whenever you go to the store, you buy those items that your family typically uses, and you rotate from the back, and you just keep that 30-day supply there. Number one, because situation where you needed to dip into them, you already have a 30-day food supply right there on hand. And for the psychological effect in that type of scenario, having those foods that you normally consume gives you kind of that illusion of normalcy that will keep your family from hitting that kind of panic hysteria mode of oh my God, what has just happened? It's sometimes it's those little things in those situations that gives you a little bit of comfort. And then the long-term strategy, of course, is going and getting some of these long-term food supplies, you know, these things that store for 20 to 25 years, and having that on hand as well. But I definitely think in this day and age, we need to start getting people away from that idea that preparing is for the conspiracy theories or conspiracy theorists, and get them into the mode of it's getting back to what all of our parents and grandparents did. They all stored food. They canned food. Definitely, if you are able to sit down and learn how to can foods, not only is that great for prepping, but it's great just to save you a little bit of money. And there's tons of things out there like that. As much as we've talked about the possibility of the internet going down, the internet is a wondrous place where you can find all kinds of information, things that you never even thought about in terms of prepping. Somebody has already written a full article on it. But, and I'll make this my closing on this topic. The one thing that I would encourage everyone with is look at somebody else's prepping lists or what they suggest. Look at what your own family typically uses, what their needs are. Let's not forget, in this whole grand scheme of a possible cyber attack, things like prescription drugs and stuff like that may not be available. So if you have someone in your home who takes prescription drugs, maybe stock up on those, or at least stock up on over-the-counter alternatives that would help get them through it. If you have pets, it's a good idea to keep a little bit of pet food on hand. Just like I said, if you're looking at a short-term type scenario, those little things of normalcy is what will keep you from panicking. And I think in that type of situation, panic is probably going to kill more people than even the violence or the riots or anything like that. Don't you think, Mark?
Yeah, I do. And I think that that's one of the things we got to do. You got to be able to keep a cool head. And like you said, having those supplies on hand is going to really go a long way into giving you that sense of normalcy when nothing is normal, and helping you to get through and, you know, and being, grounded and rooted in prayer and Bible reading and being spiritually prepared. I think that that's going to really take you through it. Sergeant Tim, I just appreciate so much you taking time to speak to us today, and you've given us so much great stuff to think about. And tell the folks where they can find your work.
I run a website called News, and it can be found at outlawpatriotnews.wordpress.com. In addition to that, I am in collaboration with Stephen Minking, Pastor Mike Spaulding, and John Robertson in a project that we have called On the Objective. And we've put together a few podcasts with that. And then I'm also writing weekly, or not weekly, but daily articles that are going up on the Hagman Report website. And that's at HagmanReport.com, where I just simply give a little bit of analysis of the top story of the day.
Sergeant Chen, thanks again for making time for us today.
Hey, thank you so much, Mark.
Ready-Made Resources has a limited number of PVS-30 night vision scopes for $4,700. These are the top-of-the-line night vision scopes used by the U.S. military, which normally sell for over $11,000. Turn your 12-hour rifle into a 24-hour rifle. Visit Ready-Made Resources to get your PVS-30 today.